Welcome to Karate the Garage. I'm Corey Cope.
I'm Freddie Woff.
The Butler Did It continues.
Ring, ring.
After last week's. We're not going to get into that. You can hear in the episode. You can
last
hear
week's, what we. I've already forgotten what that movie was.
Gamer. What's it called? Oh, Gamer. That's right.
Or Lamer. Lamer than Law Abiding Citizen.
Lamer.
Here we are picking on it already.
You know what's not lame? Pointing.
The only thing lame about this movie is the name, is the title.
Yes. And Gerard Butler refused to change the name. Apparently this was the original title. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yep.
I didn't change it. And I think when this movie came out after I had seen it, I think I even said, don't let the name fool you. It's good. I know it sounds like you're like, come on, dude. Plain, really?
I mean, look, dude, I mean, it's one letter away from being plain.
Yes. You know, it's not plain.
Plain. Yeah. No, I mean, the movie's super enjoyable. I mean, it hits all those, you know, it's run on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Gerard doing his thing, man. Brody Torrance.
Dude, yes. We mentioned it briefly in Kickstart this week where this whole month of the three movies that we've covered, they're very much, you know, borrowing liberally from other places. You know, this is that
it's
thing.
It's Die Hard, kind of, right? Is this Die Hard?
Yeah, of sorts.
Sort of Under Siege.
It's got Under Siege. It's got Speed. I mean, like I said, it's definitely an amalgam of a bunch of things. But unlike Gamer, they took good stuff. they chose the right parts to put in this movie, and they execute it well. Because Coulter and Gerard, obviously, they're the leads. They make the movie work. But so does the supporting cast.
Yeah, totally.
And it's funny because I think Tony Goldwyn got added late. He's the crisis manager and he's fucking great.
God, yeah, well, he's Tony Goldwyn, dude. He's right. Not going to be bad. Like, you know what you're getting. You're always going to get a quality performance from Tony Goldwyn.
Right.
You know, he's going to elevate things because that was kind of a role that could have just been, you know.
Anybody.
Yeah, but again, I think you're right. I think if it wasn't Tony Goldwyn and it wasn't, you know, we'd be like, oh, this guy, you know. But Goldwyn, you know, makes those moments when we leave the jungle in the plane.
Yeah.
He makes them interesting and, you know, worth watching because he's a face we know and trust.
And Paul Ben Victor playing the Terry Hampton, the owner of the airline. Every time Paul is in something, I dig it. And I mentioned on the show before, there was a Three Stooges biopic that was on NBC years ago, and he plays Mo Howard in it. And he's so great in it. And when you're so used to a man having a shorn head, where he, you know, hair is very rare on Mr. Victor, Ben Victor. And to see him with a Mo haircut, out of all things, it was interesting. But he's great in the movie. I absolutely love him. So he's one of those guys, every time I see him in something, I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, he's a good character actor, man. You know, he's always like, you're always going to get a good performance out of him.
Right. You know, he plays Luca in one of Christopher Walken's guys in True Romance.
Yeah.
He's wonderful, dude.
Him and what's his face? Have some good stuff together. They're, you know, God, what is his name? The guy, he's the brother on, he is the brother on Grounded for Life. Uncle Eddie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm fucking mind. Drawing such a blank. God,
hey, we're talking about a movie. We're doing that thing when we don't want to talk about a movie, but we want to talk about this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So Plane.
Sorry for drifting, but.
Premise is simple.
Dude, this movie is...
It's exactly what you expect it to be, and that's all it needs to be.
Once you know the premise, yes, don't go by the name, because the name just is going to throw you off, and I think it threw off a lot of people. That's why I'm still surprised that it pulled 75 worldwide. It surprises me, because if you've seen the trailer, I'm like, oh, what a dumb name. When you get to the trailer, this looks fun. Oh, what a dumb name. Or... short-sighted. I don't know. The don't let the name fool you. This movie is fucking fun. Now, this movie was also really difficult to make. And even though the final person to direct the movie was Jean-Francois Verche, who also did the remake of Assault on Precinct 13.
He also did Bloodfather.
Bloodfather, yeah. But I was mostly referring to how good he is with the cast, because the cast in the Assault remake is pretty good. this movie was so difficult. This thing's been bouncing around since when? When did that pitch? It wasn't even a spec. They pitched it.
Mm.
Right? Charles Cumming had pitched it, and then they bought it in the room.
Yeah.
I want to say it was Lionsgate. Was Lionsgate the one that bought
Lionsgate,
it?
Lionsgate, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 2016.
Yeah.
So this movie.
I mean, I read it in 2019, maybe.
Something like that. This is something that you had been some involvement. So you'd seen the original script. You saw a coming script. So you know when you watch this movie, things that aren't there. And you can't get into things that aren't there. But I didn't have an opportunity to do it. I watched the movie a second time instead of digging through the extras. Because the extras on this, they're substantial. There's like an hour's worth of featurettes, which is, again, for a movie that did so-so at the box office and didn't really make them a lot of money, in this day and age, having that much of extra content for your Blu-ray release is just, it's unusual. But so, I mean, the premise is pretty straightforward. It's New Year's Eve. Gerard Butler plays this airline pilot who has kind of been bounced around, and we find out later why he's been bounced around. Because
he punched somebody.
Because he punched somebody that deserved to be punched. And boy, man. Okay, we talked about before about he's not an unassuming guy, but he's also not massive either. Gerard is 6'2", but when you have other people around him, you realize how much bigger somebody is. There's one point where Mike Coulter walks past him. As far as height goes, there's only like an inch difference between the two. But when you talk about the size of Coulter...
Dude, Coulter's wide, bro. Like I have a picture of me standing between him and Michael Paré.
Yeah.
Because Paré's a big guy, but fucking Coulter is wide, dude.
Dude, yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's wide-shouldered.
To say broad shoulders is an understatement. So when he walks past him, it's right after they've landed the plane and they're walking, and he and Gerard have had their moment together, and he walks past him. And I keep thinking, I just thought to myself, wait, they're closer in height than that, but it's not the height. It's the whole build that makes you think he's taller than he is, much taller than he is, and not just an inch or so.
He's very V-shaped.
Yeah, he's a big dude. And he gets to show it off a little bit in this. You got guns like that,
gun
man.
Gun show's on display.
And then some.
Welcome to the gun show, baby. We got guns of all kinds.
I love Coulter so much. You know, this is something. This is nothing new. This is I've talked about before with Luke Cage, obviously with South of Heaven. He is somebody that when this movie got announced, or not announced, but the trailer came out. I didn't really watch the trailer. I saw the movie before I saw it. Even saw a trailer for it. I'm like, I wonder why people aren't seeing this movie. And I saw the trailer. I'm like, oh well. I think most people aren't seeing the movie because they're not seeing the trailer because they're doing it based on the title. Because I wouldn't have seen this in the movie theater if I knew what the title was and didn't see anything. But I did because of Coulter. I saw it because of him. But when I saw the poster, I thought, like, what is this? Is this like Prison Break? That's what I thought. It felt like that kind of vibe, like it was Prison Break or something.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has, like, it's funny because, like, the gang of pirates, right? Like, I feel like what's awesome about it is they didn't cast anybody that you're like, you know, there's no stunt casting as the head of the pirate. I felt like they did a great job casting people who were absolutely right for the roles, but also people that you probably have never seen before. Or if you have, I mean, not in the leading roles. So you don't really know who's going to make it, who's going to, you know, you have your ideas about who's going to live and who's going to die and, you know, what's going to happen in it. But I feel like they do a really nice job. And same with the passengers, like outside of the three, four guys we named, everybody else is kind of, you know, maybe their faces are familiar, but mostly they're not. Passengers, pirates, even the recon guy, the guys that come in, to save the day, the reinforcements, if you will.
Usually movies like this, either you have a name playing the bad guy or you have some new person that really
kind of... Or you have Alan Rickman.
Yeah. Evan Dane Taylor plays the leader of this group. He's not in it a lot, but he has some really wonderful scenes together. And when I was kind of doing a little deep dive on his other work, because he does a lot of stunt work and stuff, and he played a mugger in season one of Jessica Jones. So he had already worked with Coulter before because they were in a scene
Luke Cage.
It's so funny, but no, that dude's really good. He does a lot of stunt stuff. He worked on Punishers. He worked on all of the Netflix movies.
Yeah, all the Netflix Marvel stuff.
The Netflix Marvel shows.
Yep. He was the fight coordinator on Punisher, I believe.
Yeah. He's badass, dude. He's a draw. I like him a lot. And he's not over the top. You know, he just does what he's supposed to do. And it's such a funny thing, right? Especially at the end of the movie, right? Where, again, we're just going to get into what it was about, what happens in it, because I feel like we dance around too much.
I feel like if you watch the trailer, dude, you know what happens. Yeah. If you've seen the trailer, you can guess what's going to transpire.
Right. Right. So there's a point in the movie where they're making the passengers and Gerard and Coulter, they're all making their way back to the plane that they've able to land successfully. By the way, I was waiting for the plane to blow up at some point.
Or the wing rip off of it.
They weren't able to dump the fuel out of the one side. And I thought it was so clever too, because you're like, oh man, I kept the foreshadowed moment for me was when they weren't able to dump the other tank of fuel. Oh shit, they're going to use it to blow the baddies up, right? I knew, I wasn't thinking for one second they were going to try to fly off the island, which is part of what it was. But so when they're all setting up, knowing that the baddies, the pirates are coming after them, at this point, they've got what? It was like half a dozen, right? Mercs that are there.
Right.
That are there that Tony Goldwyn set out there, because this is a part of the Philippine Islands where
lawlessness.
Yeah. They don't go anywhere near it. They kind of leave them alone. It's just about.
You just stay away from there, man.
And that's where our plane lands. So they got about half a dozen mercs helping them. And by the way, dude, I love the fact that it's realistic enough. You think, more people would have died. Well, two people that are on the plane die. They both die in a way that, well, one of them's obvious. If you're going to run away from a group like that, you're going to get shot. But the second one was just... I'm glad they didn't show it, because like, you don't need to. I know what happened. You know what happened. No one needs to see that, especially with the things that have happened over the last 25, 30 years to people that are held captive. When they bring out the 50 cal.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit, dude. I just watching, Joey's like going, watching them blow holes in engines and stuff, right? Just blowing up engines as... But when the 50 cal start getting used on human beings, it's surprising because you're not expecting it. Because usually it's kind of hard to...
usually you just save that for Rambo movies.
Yeah. But dude, it's so well done. And just watching the two guys like ping pong off while they're between the two cars. I'm not usually satisfied. I don't usually find violence like that satisfying in movies. I don't go, oh, that was good. I felt good. It was just, if you'd seen this in the theater, the crowd would have been reacting to it in a hooping and hollering kind of way. Because
yeah,
it's like when you see murders in slasher movies that if they're uniquely grotesque in the way somebody loses their life, that's always gains a, kind of that you were getting a lot of. I was growing up.
Oh, when you see the gang get killed in Death Wish, you know.
Yes.
With each, as each one gets eliminated, the deaths go, they get more creative and the applause gets more raucous.
Right.
I bet this was a great movie to see. I bet this would have been fun in a theater.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what the sound design might have been like seeing in a theater. I mean, I don't know. I guess I missed it because I don't know what I was doing. I was working. That's what I was doing.
Working. You silly bastard.
I was in Atlanta.
That's right.
Yeah.
One of the things I found interesting with this, and I guess this could, to a lesser extent, speak to Brendan's work in it. There are some blocking choices and shot choices that are made here that I don't, it's funny enough, these are the kind of things I would see in video games. At the end, when everybody's trying to get on the plane to leave and the mercs are laying down fire from the back of the plane on the stairwell, there's a camera shot behind one of the cars as if you were like a POV of you being ducked behind it while you're being shot at. And the squib work in this is great. This is just reminding me of it. And the way they detailed bullet shots hitting the car and then hitting the windshield, it's so dumb. I noticed, I watched it twice in this last week. And both times I I took notice of it because it was the kind of detail. Like if it wasn't there, you wouldn't think, oh, it needs that. But it's there and it's like, oh, that was smart for them to put that there. It was just, it's little things like that, that, I mean, done in post, because I'm almost betting that that stuff that I saw was all CG, but it was solid, dude. I mean, the movie definitely has a movie theater type quality to it where, you know, like I said, you sit down like, oh man, I want to watch this movie with a group of people that I don't know. And this is one of those ones that's what I said before. I said, it feels like Speed. It feels in that type of movie where this serves to be more of a communal experience than just sitting at home on the couch watching it. It's still enjoyable. Don't get me wrong. It's just that I know that if they show this fucking movie of idiots, I'm there. I don't care if it is a Sunday. I'm going to go see it.
What's cool about all that, I mean, the stuff, the photography with the airplane, all of that stuff. I mean, it's between what they shot and how it was edited, it really makes it exciting. Yeah. And Brendan's really good. I mean, Brendan also shot the Flight of the Phoenix remake, the one with Quaid.
Oh, yeah.
From 04, I think. So he's familiar with shooting large aircrafts in strange spots, whether it be in the middle of the desert or in the middle of the jungle.
Right.
But yeah, there's some really impressive camera work in this movie, which is funny because on paper, you'd be like, oh, it's pretty standard. But then, you know, when you think about like a lot of the things that they end up doing with the plane on the budget that they had. And yeah, man, it's pretty impressive. I wouldn't mind seeing this on a big screen too, like a video screening or, you know, somewhere. One of our go-to theaters. This would be a great watch.
Yeah, I think so.
You could pair it with Turbulence.
Dude. That would be amazing. Speaking, but in all fairness, that's got a legit over the top villain in it.
Yes, so, yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah,
that's a whole different type of airplane movie.
Yeah, it should be noted too that Brendan was also shot Unhinged.
Yep.
And without getting into all the details of it, kind of gives you an understanding of why you were seeing the script so early on, and we'll leave it at that. The camera work in this is very unique, but also very traditional style action movie kind of work.
Yeah. I mean, Brendan shot a lot of movies that you're probably, you know, you're familiar with. Like he shot Behind Enemy Lines back in 2000 with Hackman and Owen Wilson, which might be my favorite Owen Wilson movie, if there is such a thing.
Maybe it's the one you like, it's the one that you dislike the least.
It's the one that I can get through.
Yes.
You know, and it's mostly because of Hackman and the story. And I kept thinking maybe he's going to get blown up. But he also shot Veronica Guerin, which is a fun movie, which I think did we talk about Veronica Guerin before? I think we did because Schumacher shot it. Maybe we talked about it briefly. Oh, yeah. Also, Colin Farrell's in it. But yeah, I mean, Brendan does some good work, man. And he's a joy to work with. He's a good friend of mine. I mean, I love the dude. He's fun to spend time with, whether you're at work or whether you're off work. He loves music more than, you know, so I can't say anything, you know, I love the dude and I'd love to work with him again. And I would have loved to work on this film with him because it would have been, you know, it would have been great, but, you know, things didn't work out like that. So there you have it.
Again, there's not a lot of character actors in this that you've recognized, but there are the ones that you do recognize are very familiar. Joey Slotnick, isn't it?
Joey Slotnick. I was waiting for you to bring him up.
Yeah, it was. Well, you can't help. Yeah, I have to bring him up. He's in lots of things, like he's in Idle Hands, but most of his stuff has been done on television. I think he was on every episode of Boston Public. Does lots of voices on Family Guy, Goldberg, Blacklist. I mean, he's everywhere.
Dude, he's in Hollow Man. Come on.
Yeah. It's weird to see him bald. That was the thing, yeah, though, because he's always been mostly bald.
Like, yeah. He's been close to it for a while. He's been close to it,
but this is the first time I've seen him with his head actually shaved.
Yeah, me too. Took me a moment to recognize him.
Let me say, though, his character in this, Matt Sinclair, gets fucked up a lot. I mean, he gets two moments in there, you're like, what the shit, dude? Once they've been captured, you know, they're hostages and the pirates are filming them for ransom reasons and they're just wanting everybody to identify themselves. And he's slow to identify himself. So the guy threatening him puts his gun and discharges the weapon right next to his ear.
Yeah.
And I'm like going, oh, shit. And then later on when they're getting on the plane, he gets shot. Oh, man, poor Joey Slotnick can't get home. Poor guy.
You can't catch a break, man.
No. Okay, so here, I have a question. There's a couple of things in there that are just logistics things that confuse me. So the moment Coulter is being brought on the plane, unsurprisingly, this is after they've already checked in with the flight crew and everything like that. They have 14 passengers, but now they're adding two more. Coulter's character is being extradited back to the United States for her murder. He's been held responsible for, but we obviously find out later on. Without getting into too much detail, I'm glad they didn't waste any time painting that picture.
Because it wasn't important to what was happening.
It was not important. Bottom line, it was like, it didn't take much to say, I was innocent, but you know what? If I stayed, I would have been in jail.
Also, it's funny because Butler reacts like a real person would react in this movie. Like, okay, well, regardless, I got to trust you. Right. Otherwise, we're all going to die. So,
right.
And they don't make a big deal about that. Like, there's no moment where like, oh, they don't go down the path of least resistance is what I would say.
Right. And that exchange is great. And even before that, when he's still handcuffed, he's just so matter of fact, well, what the hell am I going to do with you? That, I mean, he's like, and he's speaking to him like a real person. He's being very frank with him.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, this is, I mean, again, because it's not important. There's thing that you understand really early on about Brody Torrance, Gerard's character. He's a no-nonsense guy. And you're already feeling this before you see the video of him knocking that guy out and basically changing his career, because now he's that guy. And now he has to fly low-rent airlines. By the way, speaking of low-rent airlines, the guy that gave him the green light to fly through the weather, I mean, he's fucked, right?
Yeah, you would think, right? Like the guy who told them you can't fly over it, you got to fly through it. Well, again, also, if he didn't, there'd be no movie. So,
right. And I love Tony Goldwyn's like moment. And he's like, how much fuel did you save on fuel? $12,000. Oh, cool. That's less than the tip that this whole thing's going to cost you. That was fucking great. Dude, Tony Goldwyn's around. But Coulter gets put on this plane. Now, and then these two girls get on the plane and they go, these are our
You're
seats.
In our seat.
And I'm like, this fucking plane's empty.
Dude, that's exactly. I was like, come on, really? Yeah. Like when the stewardess is like, oh, ladies, here, I can put you in these seats. Like 14 people on that plane. Like, I feel like they all could have been, they all sat in first class anyway.
The moment that they brought this guy on the plane, they should have all just pulled everybody forward. But I've been on enough planes that have.
Sure.
That few amount of passengers, they bring everybody up front.
Well, yeah, but didn't they bring him on the plane before they brought the passengers on the plane?
They already had him pushed in the back. Yeah, so at that point, you tell when you're getting on, like, hey, and of course, there's an upgrade joke. So is that why they did it? Just so you don't get the upgrade joke?
I guess so. I mean, some of that stuff is a little, like it's a little weirdly convenient and it's not like.
But they could have done it. They could have done a double joke with that.
Well, you'd think that they'd sit him in first class, like closest, so that everybody's in one spot.
Yeah.
And then your joke is first time you ever fly first class, or this is the first time I've ever flown first class.
Yeah. There's other jokes that are there.
Yeah.
And again, you could have still built off the one with the guy and his boss.
Yep.
Right. You could have just gone, he's like, oh yeah, you get all snarky with the boss. And next thing you know, how the flight attendants go, all right, everybody up front.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
It does not detract from anything.
No, it doesn't. It was just one of those things that made you go, I've never been on a plane that empty before, but wouldn't you not have I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I mean, dude, if you've flown red eyes, dude, you've been on a lot of, I mean, I've been on a lot of flights that like have, it, you know, 14 or maybe even less. I've been on a plane one time that had four people on it and it was weird. Super weird. I thought it was like, you know, it was like Langoliers weird.
Langoliers.
First and last time anyone will ever mention Langoliers.
No, I think we did.
Yeah, I know we've mentioned it before. Yeah, we have, definitely. What makes this movie work again, like, it was because you root for Butler, dude. You want Brody to graduate from low-rent airlines. You know he's better than that. And you want him to get home to his daughter for New Year's.
Yep.
It's what's important.
Yep.
Right? You know, it's that very John McClane diehard kind of thing that we can all root for. So I want to say this movie is not a Christmas movie, but it's in between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah, it's right. It's a post-Christmas movie because it's happening on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And then New Year's Day. Yeah.
It's so crazy to feel like when you watch it, like realize it all literally happens in one day.
Right. And what's extra weird, too, is you're dealing with time zones that are very specified early on when Brody's talking to his daughter about is he going to get to Hawaii for New Year's. And they're playing time with the fact that where I'm at, the time change, I'm this far ahead of you.
Right.
It was clever how they were doing that. But ultimately, yeah, this takes place in less than a day from the flight until they fly out of there, because they fly out the next day.
Yeah,
they
don't even fly, and you're flying back in time, sort of.
Langoliers. Yeah.
No, but yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. It's funny because it's an hour and 47 minutes, but it feels shorter than that. Like it knows where it's going. It doesn't, and it doesn't dilly dally with like unimportant shit, you know, like what did Coulter do? We don't have those moments, or, you know, I love the fact that they didn't single out any of the passengers to give you any backstory. Like usually you get, you know, like, oh, there's the old man having a heart attack, and they didn't go to any of those tropes.
Right.
It's a Gerard Butler movie. It's why we watch Gerard Butler movies, because it's, you want to see Brody Torrance kick the shit out of these guys. You want to see Louis Gaspar help him kick the shit out of these guys. And you want to see Tony Goldwyn insult all of the fucking idiots who caused this thing. And you get all that.
Yeah, he's great. I'd be remiss not to mention Yosun Ahn, who plays Dell, his co-pilot.
Yeah.
Dude, fucking so good, man. He's really good in the movie. He's got a lot to work with, too. You know, when we introduced him, he's very... Let's put it this way. You're instantly... He's got, like, ability to him. And you're going, oh, fuck, he's going to die, isn't he?
Well...
And he does a great job, dude. Like, you get to see some range with him. Because ultimately, when Gerard runs off with Coulter to go find some help, he's left to be the representative for the group when the pirates come and pick him up. Yeah, he's pretty good at it, man. He's solid, and he's in it a lot too. All the background performers or supporting cast, I shouldn't say background, he's in it as much as Butler and Coulter are. And it's because he has a lot of his standalone moments where he's not with either one of them.
Right.
He's great in it, dude. He's that perfect right-hand man. He is the Sandra Bullock of the movie. If you were to say that, he's perfect. And this is one of the reasons, and he's one of the reasons why it works so well.
Yeah, they have a good chemistry together. You totally buy their...
instant camaraderie. And I think it speaks a lot to Gerard's...
Yeah, his sort of easygoing charm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he has a knack for that, right? Like, that's kind of the reason we like him in these movies is because...
Right. And tell me, is that something that's massively missing from Gamer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to talk about Gamer.
No, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, you're 100%. Yes.
Even our drive for the movies this month and that drive for that movie, we're not watching it unless Gerard's in it. But there's also something, and I'm just now realizing that piece is missing. I'm like, oh, we're not getting a traditional Gerard Butler performance in that movie because we're not seeing all the angles that we usually see from him.
Yeah, no, it's pretty one-dimensional. Like, that movie's got a lot of problems. And one of them is just, it's not good.
But this one, I mean, this, again, they get it all right, but this is the setup vanilla? Yeah, I mean, we've seen it before. We've seen some derivative of this before. But what makes those kind of movies special and how you pull away from that is the little things that you make your own and properly casting. And there's not somebody in this movie where I didn't think, yeah, you're out of place or anything like that, you know? And again, one of the things I thought was, again, I don't know if I can't speak for the script because I didn't see it. I'm going to lean more on the director here. I have to say Richey's efficiency with people, and they're only talking as much as they need to. They don't like you talked about, we're not getting a bunch of backstory people because who gives a fuck?
Right.
I'm learning enough about people in the movie. I'm learning enough about the supporting cast on the plane that I'm like, all right, well, you know what? You're not a dick, so I don't want you to die.
Show me, don't tell me. They show you everything. Right. You know, again, it's a movie. We shouldn't have to have a long, drawn out fucking speeches about who I am or who this person is or why I should care about this person or why I shouldn't care about this person. And, you know, and they do that really well. I mean, I'm also a big fan of his Mesrine films, the two, Richey's two films that he made with Vincent Cassel back in or, you know, was that 2008, 2009?
Right.
I feel that he is a very efficient director. He shoots what he needs to shoot and not a lot more, right? There's not, not that I'm not saying that there's not enough fat on the bone, as they say, but right. when you see his movies, like dude, even Bloodfather, which a lot of people either haven't seen or I don't know what the take on Bloodfather, but I actually enjoy Bloodfather. I saw it and I didn't realize it was a Richer film. And I was like, oh, this is kind of groovy because I missed the opening of it. And then I, you know, when I found out but it has all the same elements, you know, Bloodfather is a movie you could easily swap Gibson out and swap Butler in, and you might like it more than you like it with Mel. But I think that's part of Richer's deal is like, you know, he doesn't overstuff his films with unnecessary moments and dialogue and
right.
Even the action sequences, they're concise, they're exciting. They feel fresh to us, even though we've seen this, because they're not overstuffed. He didn't try to create, you know, recreate the wheel. He just gave us what we needed for the moment, and it works.
Right. Bloodfather, I saw on accident because Amazon packed it in with some other stuff. I didn't order it and it just came with it. I'm like, oh, I might as well watch this. It's funny because you look at it and you think Redbox, right?
Yeah.
Because of where Mel Gibson was at this point. He's in that window of time now where he's having post-arrest career. And it's actually really fucking good.
Yeah, dude, it's got a great cast. I mean, you got Diego Luna, Bill Macy's in it, Dale Dickey.
Michael Parks.
It's got all the people that would be loving it. I mean, again, it's funny because Redbox is exactly what I would think during that window of time. But it's actually, I feel like it's one of Mel's better movies since like that and Edge of Darkness are like, I feel like his two best movies.
Love Edge of Darkness, dude. And that's another thing too. He's working with a foreign director and then makes such a huge difference in a lot of ways. Like we talked about the likability of Gerard and everything like that. Pre-arrest, Mel Gibson had that kind of effect.
Yeah.
The cinema audience. And
I'd say if there's anybody that Gerard sort of, for me, like his whole persona and the reason I watched his movies, he kind of stepped into that Mel Gibson role for me because there was a point where I would see every Mel Gibson movie before, you know, his meltdown. And I still watch the movies that I like with Mel. I still watch him, but he doesn't make those movies anymore. No. because he is what he is these days.
Right. So look what Mel was doing. Okay. What is Gerard Butler's Bird on a Wire? What's his version of that?
It's called Bounty Hunter.
Yeah. 100%.
No, that's what I'm saying. He's kind of stepped into that role because you could see Law Abiding Citizen with Gibson. Mm-hmm. You could see maybe, I don't know that Gibson would have ever made Gamer.
No.
I'm just going to call no. But no. This movie, I could see Mel Gibson as the pilot in this movie. I could see Mel in the movie we're going to do. Maybe. Right. We'll see. But yeah, I really enjoyed playing. I mean, again, it does what it should do.
Yep.
Biggest part of that is the casting. It's like Butler and Coulter are great together. Their scenes together. I'm never going to say chef's kiss because that's lame. But I mean, they work together like they've known each other for more than 12 hours.
Right. And again, it's the likability of both performers.
Yeah. It goes a long way.
When you see South of Heaven, are you not supposed to like his character?
Right.
You know? Okay, so there's number three for us.
Yeah,
for
it is.
The Butler
Ring
did
the
it.
Butler, the Butler did it.
Yeah, and he brought the Cage along to do it with him.
Yeah, man.
Solid movie. It's on Stars right now. I would anticipate this within because it came out a year ago, hit optical just a little over a year ago, last March. So I would anticipate this hitting the Tubi, Freevee kind of vibe, maybe by the year's end, somewhere around there.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's funny. Like I have Stars attached to my Hulu. So it was on Hulu, but Stars.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's going to end up, you know, we'll be watching it like we watched Law Abiding Citizen or Gamer. Right. I would say probably, yeah, you know, who knows, by next fall, maybe.
Seek it out. But here's just one of the things. Unlike last week with Gamer, this one's worth renting. And it might be only a couple bucks. So, or hell, again, if you haven't used your Stars freebie yet for your trial, there you go.
It's $1.99 for 7 days. Just remember to cancel.
Actually, you know, there's a Star special right now. I think it's $20 for 6 months.
something like that, or $1.99, or it's like $2 a month for whatever. Yeah, there's some sort of special. I keep seeing it, but I mean, yeah. Apparently I already have a special that I use through Hulu.
So you want to follow the show on the socials, you can follow us at Karate Pod on Twitter, Insta, and Letterboxd. If you want to follow Corey on Letterboxd, it's Corey_Culp, and on Instagram is Culprit97. And if you want to follow some other socials, another linkage, you can look at the bottom of our episode show notes under Karate in the Garage linkage, and you'll find everything there.
If you'd like to follow me on Instagram, I'm at rockandroller33. If you'd like to follow me on Letterboxd, I'm at Tom Cody on Letterboxd. If you'd like to follow me at Blue Sky, it's the real John Ladd at Blue Sky.